You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard.
On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, you have some news to share. You were a guest on another CFL podcast last week. Anyone who were looking for their Podski fix last week could have got it from you somewhere else. Why don't you tell everyone where you were?
Well, I was happy to be invited on to the First Down Sports podcast. You can follow them at FirstDown36 on Twitter. I just went on there. You talk some. They're based at Moncton, so they are obviously highly interested in the expansion of the CFL to that region. And we talked about that a little bit. We talked about the Ticats a little bit. We talked about Manziel a little bit because one of the members of their podcast is a big Cleveland Browns fan. So
poor guy.
Yeah, I know. So he was interested to talk some Manziel. Had a great time. They have a great podcast, and everyone should check them out.
Well, that's cool. I guess when Halifax does get a team, we're going to talk a little bit later about the chances of that happening. We'll have to invite one of those guys on to talk some Atlantic, I guess for lack of a better term, we'll call them the Schooners right now. We'll return the favor in a couple years, get one of their guys on here to talk some stuff. It's good. I always like going on other people's podcasts. I feel like if there's less pressure, I feel a little bit more relaxed. There's so much work that we put in to doing this with the research and coming up with things to talk about. We're on there, it's just like you go on there, hey, we're gonna ask you some questions, you're like, yep, sure, and you just kind of wing it, and I find that really fun. So I'm glad you had a good time, and anyone check them out. It's why don't you give them their Twitter handle again so people can find them
at FirstDown36.
All right, let's get into Ticat stuff. Something we lamented a few episodes back, talking about when is this team going to name a coaching staff? And last week we got that, and they pretty much gave the names of everyone. I think we talked about this at the time too, where we kind of said they're going to wait until they have everything settled, and they're going to make one big release, and that's exactly what they did. So we know that Dan Morrison, who came in late last year, he's going to be the quarterback's coach for this team. Dennis McKnight, who was the team's special teams coordinator last year, has been moved to the offensive line. He's going to be the offensive line coach. Corey Grant, who played for the Ticats, Stony Creek guy, he's now the assistant offensive coordinator, which is a bump up for him, and he's the running back coach. Dennis McPhee is the defensive line coach once again. William Fields will be coaching DBs. A name familiar to a lot of people, Craig Butler, is listed as special teams and defensive assistant. And we have Jared Baines coming back as the offensive quality control coach, and he gets the job of assistant wide receivers coach. The interesting thing here is we didn't get an offensive coordinator or a special teams coordinator. I think we kind of understand that June Jones is going to take that role. And I guess Craig Butler might kind of be the de facto special teams coordinator, which is kind of cool for him after just starting his coaching career. But those are some of the names. But there's two big names for this coaching staff that we talked about. We mentioned it before. Jerry Glanville was coming in to be on the defensive side of the ball. We found out he's the defensive coordinator for the team. But I think the big one, the one that took everyone by surprise, the one that got everyone happy, Coach O, Orlando Steinhauer, is back with the Ticats after a year at Fresno State. He is the assistant head coach. Let's talk about Orlando Steinhauer, Mike. How surprised and how happy were you when you saw the news that he was heading back to Hamilton?
I was shocked. I did not see this one coming at all. I mean, he went to Fresno State. I believe they were a 2-win team the year before, and they turned it around to a 10-4 record. So all indications were that everything went great there, and he would be sticking on for many years to come. Maybe stepping up in the NCAA, which if you're familiar with the NCAA, there's a lot of money to be made in coaching in Division I NCAA football. So, yeah, I was completely shocked that he came back. There must be some kind of under-the-table deal that after June Jones' tenure is done in Hamilton, Orlando Steinhauer will be the next head coach of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
I think you're probably right. I don't think they – like, I remember – I can't remember who – I think it was Drew. I think it was on the Three Down Nation podcast. Might have been Dunk. It was one of the two where they're talking about nothing's been promised to him because if this team goes 2-16 and they gut the staff again, he's probably out of a job. You know what I mean? But
right.
I think you look at this, you see he didn't come back as defensive coordinator because there's nothing in him. There's nothing in it for him to come back as defensive. He's done that. He's not going to learn anything new.
Comes back, was he not already the assistant head coach when he left?
He was.
And defensive coordinator?
But I don't think he did anything with the offense. And if you look at the press release, if you look at the things June Jones said, it looks like this is a way to get him some experience on the offensive side of the ball, which he doesn't have. Obviously, was a standout defensive player throughout the years with the Ticats and the Argos, and obviously has coached on the defensive side of the ball since his playing career ended. Now this gives him a chance to kind of learn the offense. It also, he gets to become kind of a helping hand for everyone. He can help Jones more of learning the game than he's got a little bit of experience. He can help Glanville, which we'll get to in a moment, on the defensive side. Like, this looks like it's almost like it's assistant head coach. That's exactly what it is. He's almost like the vice president to the president, where it's like, you're going to take on all these roles. You're going to learn under me. And then, yeah, I kind of agree. When Jones, who's a little older, and I don't think is the long-term option here. I think he signed a three-year extension. I imagine he'll ride that out. This gives Steinhauer a chance to kind of learn the roles of a head coach and then hand it over to him. Whether that happens or not based on the team's performance, I don't know. But, yeah, this kind of took me by surprise. But this has got to be – there's got to be something more to it in – like, I know his family really likes the area. I know he's obviously finished his career with the Ticats and the Argos, obviously very familiar with the area.
Yeah, like, he's been in the area for so long. Yeah,
exactly.
He's been, like, played for the Ticats, played for the Argos, coached for the Ticats. You know, it's been 20-plus years probably that he's been in the Southern Ontario region. So, yeah, it's probably – he's coming back home, basically.
Yeah, but I was still very shocked when I saw this. I did not think – I didn't see this coming. I don't think anyone saw this coming, but – the grins on Ticat fans across the country and in Hamilton especially, you could see it from a helicopter. Everyone was so excited when this happened, and I joined that chorus with them.
Yeah, the fans were happy. You could see the players' reaction on Twitter, the defensive players mostly. They were just like over the moon about this move. So I think it's a spectacular move bringing back Coach O. He has a great connection with the players. He's a great coach, a great defensive coordinator, and he's going to do good things.
Now, the opposite side of that is Glanville, and there's been a lot of negativity surrounding his hiring a certain former quarterback of the Tiger Cats, which we'll talk about a little bit later, had some choice words about the team's coaching hierarchy here. But Glanville's hiring, and especially his naming as defensive coordinator, took a lot of people by surprise. I think, like I said earlier, we all kind of knew he was going to take a role on the defensive side. I didn't think personally that he was going to be the guy on defense, but this has been met with heavy skepticism and kind of an air of negativity around it, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are worried about the lack of experience in the CFL. They're worried about his age a bit. They're worried about his nature in general. You know, he has a bit of a past in his coaching. Let's just run down a little bit of his coaching experience. He started in 1967 with the Western Kentucky, whatever they're called, as the defensive coordinator. 1967, Josh. That's the last time the Maple Leafs won a Stanley Cup. That's a long time ago, my friend.
That's 51 years ago.
Yeah. After that, Georgia Tech, Detroit Lions, Atlanta Falcons, Bills, Oilers, Falcons, University of Hawaii, Portland State, and now the Hamilton Tiger Cats. His last job was with Portland State, according to the page, which is, you know, not always accurate, but that's a long time in between coaching gigs, 9 years.
Yeah, it is, but I like,
it's in his blood, though, right?
It is in his blood, and I know the age thing, and it's not an exact parallel, but Dick LeBeau is a defensive coordinator in the NFL. He's 80 years old. He spent the last, like, 63 years of his life in the NFL or something ridiculous like that. Obviously, Glanville has been out of coaching for quite some time. But the thing that took me with Glenn, I was skeptical about this too, because he's a little bit weird. The one thing that everyone seems to know about Jerry Glanville is he's famous for coining the phrase "not for long" in reference to the NFL, and he used to leave two tickets, I believe, when he was the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, two tickets at the will call window for Elvis for every home game. So he's a little bit of a weirdo, and I say that in not in a negative way, just he's different. But I liken him to kind of Jeff Reinbold. Jeff Reinbold was a coach here for many years. Everyone knows who Jeff Reinbold is who listens to the show. But he's a little out there. He's a little bit different, but he makes it work. I feel like Glanville could make it work too. And then, you know, my skepticism is still there, but I saw this article by Steve Milton from The Spectator that was posted on Three Down Nation where, you know, I'll just read the passage here. This is what Milton wrote. He, meaning Glanville, helped out for 5 days at the Ticats 2017 training camp and was baffled for 3 days by the 12-man offense, but says that by the fourth day, in theory at least, he'd figured out ways to defend it. Because of that exposure, he watched every CFL game on ESPN last season and concludes that the most significant difference between 3- and 4-down football is the 1-yard restraining line. And this is a direct quote from Glanville. The offense has time to sort out a blitz with that extra yard. So if you've got any pressure coming, it better be instant. Now, it's not necessarily what Glanville said, but the main passage to me in this was he was with the Ticats last year at training camp, which I had forgotten about, but that because of this, he watched every CFL game last year. So he's unfamiliar with it from a coaching standpoint, but he's clearly put the work in. And there was no guarantee that he would be getting a job. He just was like, he wanted to expand his football knowledge. I don't know. That gives me a little bit of comfort. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, more comfort than I would have if he hadn't watched any CFL football. I mean, this guy obviously loves the game of football, no matter what level. He's gonna watch it. So for me, knowing that he was paying attention last year, you know, he was at training camp, and then he watches every game on ESPN. It is comforting, and it's also comforting to know that Coach O is back with the Ticats to help him along. And, you know, the difference is he knows it already, but he hasn't been, you know, in the you know, he hasn't been on the sidelines coaching an actual CFL game. So I think Coach O is going to be huge, huge help to Glanville.
I guess there's been just because there's been a lot of negativity surrounding this, maybe it's my instinct to kind of go the opposite way with it, you know, but I just feel like let's take a wait and see approach, you know, and I'm going to compare it, but I'm not comparing it. So I just want to make that clear. Mark Trestman had no CFL experience when he stepped up here. And look at how successful he's been. I'm not saying Jerry Glanville is going to be Mark Trestman. I'm not even thinking that in the least. But, yes, there's the Bart Andruses out there. There's guys like that who had no CFL experience. Gary Crouton, I remember, as an offensive coordinator with Winnipeg, had no CFL experience. And they came up here and they bombed. They failed completely. But it's not unheard of. They're not asking Jerry Glanville to come up here and reinvent the wheel. He's going to bring his philosophies here, which if you go back and look, the grit splits in the Atlanta Falcons of the 1970s, that was Jerry Glanville. That was revolutionary at the time. That's something he's known for. Yes, it was 40 years ago, but still. And like you said, he's got Orlando Steinhauer here to kind of help him along. And obviously the players, like you said, their reactions on Twitter were like basically, you know, the praying emojis and all that other sorts of stuff that I don't really understand. But they were so happy that he's back. I feel like this could work. And I'm not, again, I'm hesitant, like I'm skeptical in a way because it's like I want to see it before I'll believe it sort of thing. But I'm not in that camp of like, this is the worst idea ever.
No, I'm not either. Now, what do you expect to see from this defense now? Because he has a reputation of being, when he was with the Oilers anyway, he was the head coach, he was not very well liked because of his defense. They were perceived as being dirty. Now, I hope that he brings that intensity, you know, that aggressive style without going over the line. I think we're going to see aggressive styles on both sides of the ball this year for the Ticats with June Jones running the offense and Glanville running the defense.
Aggression is the name of the game, man. He said it in that quote, the blitz. It's got to be instantaneous, essentially. I think we're going to see a lot of that. They've always kind of played with an edge. You have guys, I know, like, Simone Lawrence always plays on the edge. Larry Dean plays on the edge. Adrian Tracy plays on the edge. I think these guys are going to be continuing to play in the same. Like, I just, I just look at the talent on the team and I see the coaching style. Like, I don't know if there's going to be a ton of philosophical changes from what's worked before, but I do think that we're going to see a very aggressive and fast defense. I think that's probably going to be what sort of Glanville's stamp on this defense will be.
Yeah, and that's what Steinhauer's defense was like when he was with the Ticats as well. It was a lot of blitzing going on. So, yeah, the more I think about it, the more optimistic I am about it. I know that there is worries about Glenn. You know, I think it's going to work out okay.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Season's here in, what, 4 months? So we don't. We got some time before we have to worry about it. But you know what? I'm going to stay on the positive side here, but with a healthy dose of skepticism, if that makes sense.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so next up, the Ticats released a few players. I think a few of them we saw coming. Both Kenny Allen and Sergio Castillo were let go, as was running back Rajion Neal and defensive lineman and Hamilton native Ben D'Aguiar. The Castillo one, we talked about it when we talked about the Hirolahu signing, how bad I felt for Castillo, but I think we kind of all saw the kicker moves coming once Hirolahu was signed. I think both those guys performed. Like, Castillo, obviously with the injury, wasn't going to be playing this year, at least not early. Allen, I thought, did pretty damn well coming in last year, and I think the only thing that holds him back is his passport. I think if he was Canadian, a team would have him, and I think if any team decides to pick him up, I think he could be a real asset. I thought he did excellent in the punting game, and I thought he did pretty darn good as a field goal kicker.
Yeah, he filled in well when Castillo went down last year, so I think he'll get a look. You know, like you said, the passport thing is tough. Every team wants a kicker that's Canadian that can do all three jobs for the ratio, obviously. So he's a talented guy, and he should get another shot.
So with the release of Ben D'Aguiar and Rajion Neal, I don't think those are really all that surprising. I feel like D'Aguiar, when he came in, was only coming in to as a warm, but they needed a Canadian guy, they needed a special teams guy. He was local, they brought him in. Neal never played for them, so I can't really say too much about either of these moves. What about you?
Yeah, me neither. I mean, D'Aguiar, obviously his heart's not into it anymore. If he doesn't want to play anymore, he doesn't want to play anymore. I know that he was a local guy. I think he went to McMaster, if I'm correct.
I think he also went to D'Aguiar. Barton. I think he went to okay. McMaster University. I think he went to Barton Secondary School, which is like, boo Barton. As a Sherwood guy, I hated Barton.
But yeah, you know, not much to say about these guys. I wish them all the best, though.
Yeah, pretty much. So guys leave, guys come in. Ticats made a few signings. Similar to the last time we talked about signings, these aren't household names, but these are guys I want to touch upon just because you never know who they could be. So they brought in four American players, international defensive back Jamal Roll. He played 19 games with the Houston Texans and Baltimore Ravens, and his NFL stats, 22 tackles, 3 interceptions. Not too shabby. They brought in an international defensive lineman by the name of Julian Hauser. Not much information on him, though. When he spent time with the Jets and the Seahawks in the NFL, they converted him from defensive line to fullback, so that shows a little bit of versatility there. They brought in international linebacker Junior Sylvester. He spent time with the Indianapolis Colts, Miami Dolphins, and Buffalo Bills over the last 3 years. And last but certainly not least, international wide receiver Harvey Binford spent time with Green Bay, Arizona, and Indianapolis after spending 2 years in the Arena Football League with the Philadelphia Soul. So, Ticats, I think we talked about it last time. We talked about them bringing in young American players. This is going to be a tough team to crack for rookies, but I always feel like we should bring these guys up because you never know if one of these guys midseason we're going to be talking about breakout star. You know what I mean?
Yeah, every year there's an unknown player, never heard of. He comes in and suddenly he's a star in the CFL. So these four guys, there's the potential there. The first guy you mentioned, you know, he's started a lot of games in the NFL. And, you know, you got to be a pretty talented guy to not only get into the NFL, but start games. So it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a stud in the CFL, but it just shows that this guy's a very talented dude and can get it done at high levels of football. So we'll see about all four of them.
So you broke our cardinal rule early on and mentioned the name Manziel. We're not talking about Johnny Manziel because we're both sick of it. The other thing that I hate talking about, but yet we always have to, is Henry Burris taking shots at the Hamilton Tiger Cats. It seems every time a mic is thrown in this guy's face, and I wrote a piece about this that just went up on Monday on 3Down, and I've been called every name in the book for it, but it seems like every time Henry Burris has a microphone in front of his face, He's doing something to kind of bury the Ticats. And I get it. He's now in the job of giving his opinions, and I'm fine with that. I'm in the business of giving opinions. That's my job. I would never begrudge him that. But some of the comments he made, we all know what he's made in the past, talking about the team and all the terrible things they did to him when they let him go. But this one was, I don't know, he went on radio in Ottawa. I guess I'll just get to it. He went on radio in Ottawa and just kind of what we talked about, really questioned whether this Ticats coaching staff could work. And I look at Burris as a guy who played 20 years in the CFL, multiple Grey Cup champion, multiple MVP. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I feel like he should be better than this. Don't you? Am I wrong to think that? I feel like he's been around the game long enough that he doesn't look at something like this and give that knee-jerk reaction that maybe you or I would as fans, guys who are on the outside looking in. He just kind of shoots his mouth off, and it's always negative against the Ticats. And I get it. He's bitter about the way his time ended here. I'm just so sick of him. I wish that he would be this critical of other teams. Maybe I take his criticism more. I don't want to say I take it personally, but I listen to it more if he was critical of other teams. It seems the only team he's ever really critical of is Hamilton.
Yeah, it's kind of odd because he's been let go from a lot of teams, and he just really holds on to that hatred, or he just really mad at the Ticats organization for letting him go a couple of years ago. And listen, it worked out for him. I mean, he got let go. He went to Ottawa. He won a Grey Cup in his last year. He should be, you'd think he'd be over it by now. But to his comments, I mean, they're not that outrageous. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, as you might say. A lot of big egos in that Ticats coaching staff. You got Ken Austin. You got June Jones. You got Glanville. You got Steinhauer. I mean, you could look at it that way, or you could look at it as, damn, we got a lot of really great minds in this coaching staff that if they all work together, we could have a hell of a team here.
Well, I see, the way I look at it, yes, I don't disagree with some of the things he said. Yeah, there's a lot of big personalities on this coaching staff. But you look at Glanville, you look at Jones, you look at Steinhauer, they're all at different points in their coaching career. Jerry Glanville's not coming in here looking to undermine the head coach or underline Orlando Steinhauer and make a power play for the top job. You know what I mean? He's not – I think if Jerry Glanville became the head coach of the Hamilton Ticats, he'd probably say, guys, I don't want this. He's 76 mm-hmm. years old. I don't think he wants to be running a football program. June Jones seems so laid back. And yes, I'm sure he has his ideas that he thinks will work. And he obviously is very strong in his opinions. But I feel like just the way he presents himself to the public, and that's all I can go on. He seems a really collaborative.
He seemed like he'd be a good boss, right?
Yes, he'd be a good boss. Precisely. Yeah. Almost the polar opposite of Ken Austin. Ken Austin looks very much like he'd be a taskmaster. And that works for him. And I'm not downplaying. Everyone has different management philosophies. Ken Austin seems like he's someone who's my way's the right way. We're going to do it my way. Where June Jones seems much more collaborative, much more. Oh, you have an idea? Yeah, let's take that. Let's use that. And Orlando Steinhauer is coming here, and he's the young guy. He's at a different point in his career. He is looking to make upward momentum, but he realizes, having been around the game for so long, the only way he's ever going to get promoted is if he does a good job. And the only way that you can prove that you're doing a good job is if your team is successful. So I feel like all these guys are going to coalesce and make it to a point where they're going to do what's best for the team. And that's where I kind of take issue with Burris's opinions, is that it feels like he's saying these guys are going to clash and they're going to do what's best for them. And I just don't see it that way.
Yeah, I don't see it that way either. I mean, you look at Glanville, we have a lot of former head coaches here, Glanville, Jones, Ken Austin, Orlando Steinhauer is going to be a future head coach. So there's a lot of experience, a lot of intellect about football on this coaching staff. And, you laid it out pretty good. June Jones is a pretty laid back guy. Seems like a guy that you could, get along with very easily. Seems like a guy you'd want as your boss. So I'm going to be the optimist again in this episode.
which is very rare for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Maybe next week, our next podcast, I'll be all negative, but at this moment in time, I am going to say that it's going to be fine. Everything is going to flow together nicely.
All right. Enough of that, Chode. Let's move on to talk some CFL stuff. The big one was, since the last time we met, Randy Ambrosi did his Randy's Road Trip, hit every CFL city, plus one, and that plus one was Halifax, and they were live streaming that town hall meeting, And last time we sat down, there was all this talk that they would be announcing the team and the site and all that. That didn't happen. So, Mike, your bozo from last episode stands.
Mm-hmm. I forget his name already, but it's okay.
Yeah, so do I. But he remains the bozo. But they did this live stream, and I watched a fair amount of it. Did you get to watch any of it?
I watched – I couldn't watch it live. Unfortunately, I was working, but I saw pieces of it.
How dare you have a job, sir?
How dare I? But I did catch some of it in the aftermath.
Okay, so I kind of just want to talk about kind of takeaways from this. Obviously, I watched a little bit more than you, but my one big takeaway from this is that it seems like, barring a massive screw-up, that this is going to happen. Like, you listen to the guys, they had two of the members of the prospective ownership group on there, and it just feels like they're going about this in the right way. Feels like the momentum is there. And honestly, Mike, that just makes me really, really happy. It looks like we're getting this 10th team, and I know we've had our hopes up before. This is where you can go back to being Captain Negativity if you want to be, because you've always been the skeptic, although I will give you credit on this. You've been on board the optimism train with me. This feels like it's going to happen, dude. It really, really does. And if I get my heart broken here, I might be joining you and be cynical for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I mean, if this falls through, I never want to talk about Halifax.
We will never use the word expansion and Halifax in the same sentence on this podcast ever again if this doesn't come to fruition. How about that? That's
guaranteed,
the deal I'll make.
Guaranteed. But yeah, I hope it doesn't come to that, my friend, because things are happening. I think I've said this before on past podcasts, but you know, it just looks like it's actually going to happen. We have the owners. They have a plan. Things are going forward. So I couldn't be happier about the situation right now. I'm hoping that there'll be some kind of announcement in the next couple months in the off season. Well, we're getting close. I guess it's almost near the end of the off season, but I'm hoping that, you know, something happens and we have plans to start playing in 2020 or 2021. It's like, once that announcement is made, I'm going to be excited until they're on the field. I don't think I'll be, you know, I'll have a grin on my face most of the time until 2020 or 2021.
We'll be popping champagne and making it rain at the gentleman's club if that happens.
It's just so many things good happen from it. I mean, if they get a team, there's our 10th franchise. There's five teams in each division. It evens out the schedule, you know, coast to coast league. So many good things can happen if this team, you know, pulls through and actually, you know, exists in 2020, 2021. So I'm just really excited about the idea.
Hey, and we get to all travel back to the East Coast. We can all stay at one of your relatives' place out there. I know PEI is not exactly close to Halifax, but it's not exactly far. So
no,
we can all stay at your mom's house and take a road trip from PEI to Halifax for a game.
Yeah. Eat some lobster, watch some football. You know, it's a good time out there right now, even without a football team. So add the football team, you know, go to a Grey Cup in Halifax. You know, there's just so many possibilities. I'm just ecstatic.
We're going to Lobster on the Wharf if this thing happens in PEI, dude. That's my spot. Yeah. That's where I went last time I was out there. I'm going back again. The guy who owns it, or at least the guy who owned it 6 years ago, 7 years ago now, Ticats fan from Hamilton, lived in the area where I grew up. So it's like it's a home away from home as far as I'm concerned. We'll head there. We'll have some lobster. We'll catch a game. It's going to be a blast.
You a big seafood guy?
I am the biggest seafood guy. Yeah. If it crawls in the ocean, I will eat it.
Yeah, I'm a picky eater, but I like my seafood. You know, a lot of people aren't into the seafood, but I guess it's just in my blood since half of my family's out there. But
lobster, crab, fish, scallops, mussels. Yep. Clams, if it's in the ocean, I want it in my belly.
Yeah, lobster rolls at a football game can't go wrong.
Okay, you know what? We got to stop. I'm going to get hungry. We're going to have to pause the podcast so I can get something to eat. So let's move on to the other bit of CFL news I want to talk about. James Wilder Jr. shockingly signed an extension with the Argos for 2 years, got himself a little bit of a pay raise. This, like I said, shockingly, because this took me by complete surprise with the way he was talking, even in the days leading up to this. I did not see this coming. I did not think this was going to happen. I don't think I'm as surprised by this as I am by Orlando Steinhauer coming back, but I am pretty surprised that James Wilder Jr. has agreed to a new 2-year deal with the Argos. What about you?
Very, very surprised. I didn't think. I'm wondering now if he had any NFL opportunities. I mean, he technically is not allowed to talk anyone to any team when he's under contract with the CFL.
But you know they're putting out feelers. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if the interest is there. I don't know if this was just a ploy by him to get more money. I think he deserves more money. The bigger shock was the 2-year contract. Now, I don't know if he's hoping that after this year, there'll be a new CBA and he'll be able to,
get into the second year of that deal.
Right. Or at least they'll bring the 1-year option back window or whatever it was that he can go try out. And if he doesn't make it, then he has to come back to the team. But I think it's a great thing for the Argos. I think it changes their offense dramatically to have him back. I think it's a huge help to Ricky Ray, a huge help to the offense. It's just a huge help to the marketing team. I mean, they sent out season ticket renewals or some kind of email with James Wilder plastered on it. You know, he's their star right now. So I hope that it sells tickets for them having him back. I'm happy that Wilder got more money. I'm happy for the Argos. Ugh. I'm happy for the CFL. So I think it's just a good deal overall.
Did you just throw up into the microphone saying you're happy for the Argos?
Yeah, I did. I did a bit.
You know what? I'm happy that he brought this up to begin with. Like, I've seen some – it's rare, but I've seen some people kind of call him out. He's a little bit of a hypocrite for coming back. Like, you know, the general stuff you see from, like, internet trolls when – they want to get on their moral high horse. You know what I mean? When it's not their money, when it's not their livelihood they're dealing with. So I've seen a couple. It's not been a lot, but I've seen a couple of comments like that. But I think him bringing this to the forefront, I think this was an important thing. I think it was a good topic during kind of a dead time of the CFL. It got people thinking about the way these guys are treated, the way that the money that's being made. I think you're going to see some positive momentum going forward from this, and I think you owe it to guys in the future. This is going to be one of those guys where you're going to be like, man, if James Wilder didn't say anything, we wouldn't have what we have now. So, yeah, it's all the things you mentioned, Bleck as well, for the being good for the Argos, it's good for the league and all that stuff. But I think what it can do for players in the future, I think, is an important step. And it's also kind of set the market as, hey, I'm a rookie. I outperform my contract. You don't have to wait till the contract's over to get that pay raise. And, yeah, that could screw with teams salary cap-wise. But you know what? You got to pay good players. And they're going to get paid eventually. So some guys are still going to be happy. Like, you're not going to see everyone do what James Wilder did, have a great first season, and then ask for more money. But you're going to see it from some guys. And I don't have a problem with that. If guys underperform in their contract, they get cut. If guys overperform, they want a raise. I don't see the issue there. That's my personal opinion. Nope. If people disagree with me, so be it. I think this whole saga has brought things to the forefront that I think were issues that we all sort of acknowledged but never really discussed. Him bringing them up makes us discuss them, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing too. If you're producing on the field like James Wilder did. Now, I'm a little bit worried because he kind of tailed off. You know, he had a couple, like 3 or 4 or 5 huge games, and then he kind of tailed off. I'm kind of worried that, well, I'm not worried. Hopefully this is the case. But,
yeah, I hope he has 3.3 yards per carry and has 36 yards every game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe the defenses have figured him out, but I'm sure he's going to come back strong, and we'll just have to wait and see how he does.
Nah, he's a weapon.
Because imagine he comes back and then he gets cut.
Oh, jeez, like, because he stinks?
Yeah, that'd be funny. But, no, not funny. But
it would be funny, but not in like a funny for him. No, I see what you mean.
I
understand.
Yeah.
I hope no one takes you to task for
no,
that.
No, it'd be funny in like an ironic way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think they'll find ways to use him, though. I think with the offensive minds they have there, Trestman, Condell, I can't see them not finding a way to get him involved in the offense. Maybe he won't get as many touches in the run game because, you know, Tommy Condell comes from sort of the Ken Austin school where running the football isn't exactly something they like to do all that much. But you're going to see him get his touches somehow. I think he's going to be a big contributor to that offense. And I guess, you know, a couple months away, we'll wait and see.
Yep, he just needs to get better catching the ball out of the backfield. That's one thing that he needs to improve on.
Oh, look at you, Scout Mike.
I know, right?
Watching all that combine stuff for the NFL, I think you got your scouting hat on.
Actually, I've been watching a little bit of the combine, and I'm like, I watched it for like 20 minutes. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm a football fan, but I don't know if I can watch this for – that's a little bit boring.
You know what's weird? I can't watch the combine, but I can watch like a team practice. Like I've been to training camp practices for the Ticats, and it's not like the most thrilling thing in the world. But there's just something about – like, have you seen Simone Lawrence's videos that he's posting on Twitter where it's basically just him doing drills. I'm watching him going like, man, I would kill right now to be sitting in the stands at Mac or Tim Hortons Field watching guys practice football. Maybe I'm getting sort of the itch that football season's been gone a little bit too long. It's been a month since the Super Bowl. CFL season's been off for 3 months. Like, maybe I'm just getting that, like, jitteriness, you know what I mean? So it's like, all right, mm-hmm. I'm ready for football to be back. We're into March. The season starts a little bit early, so, like, 2 months from now, we're going to have the draft, and that's really, to me, when football comes in. I know we're going to have mini camps, and maybe I'll be a good chance to go see some of those. I don't know. Just seeing all this football stuff kind of has me a little bit amped to get the season going. What about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty jazzed.
Jones in a little bit, right?
Yeah. Coach Jones in. But, yeah, so I'm excited, man. Like, I can't watch the Combine for too long, but I do watch it a little bit. Different drills interest me more than other drills. So, yeah, you know, I'm a football fanatic. So, you know, the more football, the better.
All right, let's do our fun game, Big Deal, Little Deal, No Deal at All, with some rapid-fire CFL topics. I kind of touched on it just a few seconds ago. The Argos, Marcus Brady out as offensive coordinator, taking a job with, I believe, the Indianapolis Colts. And mm-hmm. it looks like, although it's not official, Tommy Condell, former Hamilton Tiger-Cats offensive coordinator, is in as the Argos offensive coordinator. So, Mike, the loss of Brady, the bringing in of Condell, where does this fit? Big deal, little deal, no deal at all?
I think Brady's a good OC, has done a good job, but I think it's between no deal and little deal, because I'm a fan of Tommy Condell, and I think he's going to do a hell of a job running that offense. I think he's got a lot of talent at his disposal. So I'm going to say in between little deal and no deal, because I think he's just going to slide right in there and keep that train rolling.
Yeah, I got it as a little deal. Like, it's a big deal in the fact that Condell's an experienced guy and he's coming in there, but it's a little deal to me just because Mark Trestman's still there. Mark Trestman's still the head coach. Mark Trestman's running that offense. He's going to collaborate with Condell, but this is still Trestman's offense. So as long as Trestman's there, that's really the only thing that matters. Like, I agree with you. I think Brady's turned into a heck of an offensive coordinator. I don't think the Argos miss a beat offensively by making this change. Next up, sticking with the Argos, Anthony Calvillo will be, or has been, I'm not entirely sure yet, will be named the Argos quarterback coach, leaving the Alouettes to go to basically what's becoming the Toronto Alouettes with all the ex-Als there. Where does this one go for you? Big deal, little deal, no deal at all?
I think it's a little deal for the Argonauts team, but I think it's a big deal for Anthony Calvillo personally to reunite with Coach Trestman, learn under Coach Trestman, because, you know, AC was arguably one of the best quarterbacks in CFL history. He hasn't been that great in the coaching, you know, following his coaching dreams. So being under a guy like Coach Trestman, learning from him, I think it's a huge deal for Anthony Calvillo.
I completely agree with everything you just said there. And I'll also say, I think it's a pretty big deal for Montreal to lose sort of the face of their franchise, even in retirement.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it's a big deal for the Owls to lose him on the coaching staff side, because I think for Calvillo himself, I think leaving Montreal and going somewhere else, I think it will allow him to, he won't have the pressure on him that he would in Montreal. Like, they thrust him into that offensive coordinator role, what was it, like 2 years ago, I think, when they made one of their dozen or so coaching firings. They bumped him up to offensive coordinator. He just wasn't ready for it. I think he goes in there, he's going to be in a quarterback. Like, you got Anthony Calvillo as the quarterback coach for Ricky Ray. Like, that's crazy to me. Those two guys met in the Grey Cup a couple of times. Like, this is...
They're like the top two quarterbacks of
this generation. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's like, so that, I just think this for Calvillo, this is such a good move for him. Again, I hate praising the Argos in any way, but I think he's going to learn a lot there. I think this is going to let him kind of reboot his coaching career. And Ron Lancaster, famously took over in Saskatchewan. He had to leave Saskatchewan to become the Ron Lancaster that we all know and love. This could be the same sort of thing with Anthony Calvillo. I think this is pretty big for him. I don't think it's as big for the Argos, like you said. I think it's big for Montreal to kind of lose this guy, but maybe they need to make that break from the Calvillo era, and they have to find new guys and new people to sort of revitalize that franchise. So maybe this is a good thing for them, too. I hope it works out for Calvillo, because I think if he wants to be a coach, he's got such a wealth of knowledge. I think he could be an asset to any team.
Yeah, I think this is a perfect position for him, being the quarterback's coach. You know, he used to be a quarterback, so it's not throwing him into something he can't handle, like the offensive coordinator job a couple years ago, which was way, way too early for him to be handling. So, yeah, I think it's a great situation for him.
And as odd as it is to say, there's not as much turmoil with the Argos as there is with the Owls. So there's no there's not really a whole heck of a lot of a chance that he's going to have to be thrust into a position that he's not ready for at any time soon. Like, he could sit there, be the QB coach, kind of be a little bit anonymous, and get used to being a coach again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. This is a fresh start for him. There are so high expectations on him in Montreal. You know, he's the legend quarterback. He brought three Grey Cups to that franchise. And I think expectations were way too high in Montreal, and they won't be in Toronto.
So last little bit of business here. We have Edmonton losing their offensive coordinator, Carson Walsh, to the Philadelphia Eagles of the NFL. I think I read that he's going to be the assistant wide receivers coach there. So Edmonton losing their OC, is this a big deal, little deal, or no deal at all, Mike?
I think it's a little deal. You know, Edmonton's offense performed pretty well last year, but I think Jason Moss will just slide into that position. You know, he'll call the plays, and I think he's a pretty darn good offensive mind, and I don't think they'll miss a beat. So I say it's a little deal.
I agree with you there. I think it's a little deal. I think the only aspect of this that would be more than a little deal is losing the OC at this part of the offseason. Like, it's March, and you don't have an offensive coordinator.
Yeah. More pressure on Moss, too. More pressure on Moss.
Yeah, and, which his heart doesn't need to take it.
Yeah, you know, we know how well he handles stress. So,
but I agree with you. Because they have Moss there, who I think, as a head coach, leaves a little bit to be desired just because of his attitude. I don't really care for it. Mm-hmm. But, and I'm going to praise the Ottawa Redblacks here. His 1 year as offensive coordinator in Ottawa, he was really good. Like, he took that job and did a great job with it. So I feel like this offense isn't really going to lose a lot. That's still a really talented team with a lot of weapons. Moss knows the offensive side of the football. I think it just adds something to his plate, which could hurt the team in the long run. We saw what happened when Hamilton had an inexperienced offensive coordinator, or no offensive coordinator, you can kind of say, with Stefan Potasik, and Austin to take on that role as well. Kind of led to a little bit too much for him to do, and we saw how that turned out. I don't necessarily see the same thing happening in Edmonton, but you never know. But for the most part, I think this is a little deal just because I think Moss takes the reins and runs with it.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, before we head out, let's do our new segment, Ticats Question of the Week. And this week, we are going to talk about free agency one last time. So Drew Edwards covered this in an article he wrote on Three Down Nation about a week or so ago. So I figured we could ask this here, and we could get some – I could get your response. We could get some response from the fans. And it's basically simple. Are you concerned that the Hamilton Ticats have only signed one free agent? So, Mike, where do you stand on this?
I am not concerned. If you look at the players we re-signed, now, if they were free agents, if we brought them in, that would be huge, right? I mean, like, three or four guys, it would be huge, huge free agent signings. You know, everybody's pretty much back from last year, and I know that last year wasn't a great year, but we've talked about it many times. The second half of the season really built up our confidence. So I am not concerned at this point about, you know, just signing Liam Haralahu as a free agent, because I think that the talent we brought back to this team is better than what we could have got in the free agency pool.
Man, I worry sometimes that you and I just, like, think too much alike. Like, I don't know if that means that we're both idiots or we're both geniuses or somewhere in between, but...
I think it's the first one.
I tend to think that, too. But that's pretty much exactly what I was about to say. Like, I'm not really that concerned because of the guys they brought back. And I think we said this when we talked about free agency. They signed, especially the day of, they signed Larry Dean and Ted Laurent that day. They signed them a half an hour to a half a minute before free agency opened. If they signed them 2 minutes into free agency, we're talking about what a great free agent haul. They brought these two guys back and they brought in Haralahu. What an amazing first day. They won free agency. But we don't really talk about those signings and the Nick Shorthill signing. We don't talk about those signings as bringing in free agents because they happened before the deadline. We don't talk about Jeremiah Mazzola getting a new contract or Brandon Banks being brought back or Tony Washington coming back and solidifying the same five offensive line starters from last year when this team was actually decent to this year. We don't talk about Justin Capicotti coming back. Like, we forget about these things, and I think we have to take into totality all the signings the team makes, not just the ones that happen after free agency opens on that, you know, second Tuesday of February. You look at what this team did, and these are all guys. If Brandon Banks gets to free agency, highly sought after player, bidding war. Larry Dean gets to free agency. Like, the guys they brought back all would have been highly sought after, probably top 15 to top 20 free agents on the ranking board. You know what I mean? So they got all these guys back before everything hits, and you don't look at their free agent haul as just Liram Hirelahu. You look at it as all the guys they brought back to. And I think we need to do that league-wide. We need to not just look at, oh, this is who they brought in, but who they brought back. And it speaks a lot to these guys wanting to come back because they feel like there's something here. And we talked about this before, last week or the week before that, whenever we last did a show. I'm just not concerned. Now, if this is the team that we saw over the last 10 games of the year, this group of players, they'll be battling for first place all year. If they aren't, and that was a fluke and a bit of a myth, and we all – you know, bought fool's gold here, then they'll be basement-ish dwellers again, and we'll be right back to where we are now. But as things stand, not at all concerned that they've only signed one person. So I'm curious to hear what other Ticat fans say, because I feel like there's a weird optimism around this team that despite a 6-12 record, people feel like this is, and I've said this before, a dark horse Grey Cup contender.
Yep. And you look around the league. What's the number? Like, who's the number one franchise over the past 10 years? Like, minus Grey Cups or whatever.
Calgary Stampeders.
Exactly. They never bring in a lot of free agents.
Nope.
And year after year after year, they are number one in the West or in contention for that. They're always in the playoffs. They're always fighting to make it to the Grey Cup or in the Grey Cup. So we have to take a look at their success. And they re-sign a lot of their guys. And that's what we did. So hopefully this works out as well for the Stampeders, or as well for the Ticats as it does for the Stampeders.
They've been to what, the last 5 or 6 Western Finals? Mm-hmm. And they've been to 4 Grey Cups in the last 6 years? Something like that? So, look, if that's Hamilton, and they've won one, obviously, but if, you know, if Hamilton goes on a run where they get to 4 of the next 5 Grey Cups and win a championship, no one's going to be concerned about what free agents they did or didn't sign in the winter of 2018.
Absolutely not. I would be over the. Give me one championship, and I'll call it a day.
You know, I just want one more. That's all I want.
Yeah.
I want one more. I saw them win. Like, I was alive for 86, but I saw them win 99. Just give me one more. That's all. Like, that's all I ask from all of my sports teams. Just if they can give me the only one I've never seen win is the Knicks. So that would be fun. But every other one I've seen win a championship, if they can all just give me one more before I die, I'll be happy.
Yeah, same here, same here.
One off season where we get to brag, just one. I'd love to come on this show just one time and be like, and start every episode with, you know, Podski Wee Wee, the podcast of the 2019, 2020, 2018, whatever, Grey Cup champion Hamilton Ticats. Like, I'd just like to have that. That's all I want, just once. They just have to win it once. We can get our gloating in. Everyone can hate us because we'll be a bunch of braggarts and we'll be the most
obnoxious.
That's the word I'm looking for. Just no one will like us. But I just want it once. Let me do it once, and then I can be happy. And then I'll just anytime anyone says anything, hey, we won in 2018. Don't care.
Yeah. I'd rather the team win and everyone hate us than the team lose and everyone love us. You know?
Well, no, they don't love us. They feel bad. They pity us. I don't want pity. I want championships, damn it.
Yeah. Us in Winnipeg, bud. Us and the Bombers.
Oh, man. Whoa, man. What would happen if those two teams met in the –
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
They used to meet all the time back in like the, I think it was the 50s or 60s. They used to be a huge rivalry between Hamilton and Winnipeg because they played in the Grey Cup quite a bit. So to see that game again where two franchises, one since 1990, one since 1999, haven't won a Grey Cup, I mean, there would be a lot at stake in that Grey Cup game. There would be a lot of interest, I think.
So maybe I'm getting older, maybe I'm getting less grouchy, maybe I'm getting less selfish. Give me back-to-back Bombers, Ticats, Grey Cups with both teams winning, and I think we'd all be happy. I mean, Saskatchewan fans and Argo fans wouldn't be happy, but I think I think just to breathe that sigh of relief for both franchises, it's like when the Cubs and Cleveland played in the World Series. Like, as much as I'm a Cubs fan, I was like, you know what? If Cleveland wins, I'm not going to be too pissed off. It's been like 80 years since they won. The Cubs got it, and I was so happy. If Cleveland wins a World Series, even if they beat Chicago in the World Series, I'm not going to be bummed. I feel like back-to-back Bombers, Ticats, Grey Cups, with the Ticats coming out on top first and the Bombers coming out on top the next year, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it. I'd rather the Ticats win both, but you know, if they share, I mean, I have no ill will against the Bombers or the Bombers fan base. I've never really met a Bombers fan that I maybe I have, but I just, you know, I like them. I'm pulling for them to win a championship just just don't do it against the Ticats unless we win one first. How about that?
Yeah. Exactly. All right, everyone. That's the show for this week. Remember that you can subscribe to our little show here where we apparently love both the Bombers and the Ticats. Not necessarily in equal measure, but we're happy to share things here. So why don't you share this podcast with all your friends by downloading it yourself and then sharing the links on social media. We'd love that. But you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and, of course, 3downnation.com. And, of course, hit us up on those social medias. Tell us how we're doing. Tell us if we're doing well, if we're doing poorly. Call us idiots. Whatever you want to do, hit us up there. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PodskiWeeWee, which is the show account. Or you can hit us up on our personal accounts where you can insult us till you're blue in the face. Mike, tell them where they can throw their insults at you, please.
You know, we make the show. There was a comment there. You know, we're a little bit boring, but at least we give you something, right?
You know what?
A little bit boring, but we give you something. So
that is basically the epitaph of my life. I'm boring, but I give you something. It's effort.
Yeah, exactly.
I may not be the best, but we give an effort.
Yeah, I mean, we put on a show. It's not, you know, the three-ring circus. You're not going to be entertained the whole time.
I'm no goddamn dancer. I'm no dancing monkey. That's all I'm going to say. I don't dance. I'm not a monkey. Just be happy we're here.
Yeah, we just talk. So, but yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Mike_Ticats.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot where we were for a second there. And, of course, you can find me, JoshSmith_82. And, yeah, tell us to dance, monkey, dance in the comments section over at 3downnation.com. And, of course, if you want to, if you're so inclined, feel like you need to wear a T-shirt that, especially one that says, I'm a Mike Ticats guy or I'm a Mike Ticats gal, because that would tickle me pink to see someone wearing one of those shirts. Even if you just buy it and take a picture of you wearing it, I would love it so much. So you can.
We will send you your money back. Okay. If buy a T-shirt and take a picture.
Hey,
there
delete.
It's free.
Okay, no, we're going to delete this. No, we're not doing this. What are you doing?
We'll send you more money. How about that?
Okay. Mike's opinions do not reflect the opinions of the show or Josh in any way. Anyway, if you feel so inclined to pick up a T-shirt, please head over to our shop, shop.spreadshirt.ch/podskiwee. Find some stuff there. It's just seeing people wearing our stuff. We've had some orders. It just tickles me that people care enough. I love it. I thank all the fans out there for listening. But if you feel like you want to wear Mike's name on your chest, please go pick up his shirt. So, Mike, that was episode 103 of PodskiWeeWee. We're done for the week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.